to meet the candidates and learn about the issues that are unique to us. I am Mary Ann Villalock with the American Association of University Women, known as AAUW. Our organization hosts these local forums with the Mendocino Women's Political Coalition, which is known as NWPC, the Ukiah Daily Journal, known as the UDJ, and the Ukiah Saturday Afternoon Club, which is sometimes erroneously known as the Saturday Afternoon Club. It's the Ukiah Saturday Afternoon Club. We think that these forums are a valuable public service. We do hope you appreciate them, and we went to the point of considering placing a donation in our watering can out on the back table to help defray the costs of buying all these milk carton things. We want to welcome and thank public radio station KZYX for being here this evening to record this forum for later broadcast on their station, and I assume online. Thank you for that. And also KMEC is here this evening broadcasting and or recording these proceedings. So thank you very much. This evening we will first meet the two candidates for the open seat on the Mendocino County Superior Court. This is Department 5, being vacated by Judge David Nelson, who is retiring when his term ends this year. And the newly elected judge will take office in 2017. Next, we will hear from the two candidates for supervisor from the 1st District, incumbent Carrie Brown, and the challenger for her seat, Montana Podva. After hearing from these candidates, we will have panelists on both sides of two countywide measures, Measure V and Measure W. We will hear arguments on both sides of these issues. Casey Meadows, editor of the Ukiah Daily Journal, will serve as the moderator for the first part of our program. And then, since the Daily Journal has publicly taken a position on Measure W, and to avoid any appearances of unfairness, Linda Bailey will moderate the Measure W presentation.
Linda is a retired attorney, a former two-term grand jury member, and is in fact the incoming president of AAUW.
We do have timekeepers. Starting out, we have this evening we have Kayla Meadows and Irma Turner. We'll have two others later in the evening. The moderators will review the specific time schedule for each of the presentations. Most importantly, we really want your audience questions.
We have note cards in the back of the room, and I and several other helpers will be roaming around, really, so just indicate to us that you either have a card with a question for us to pick up,
or if you want a new card, and we will bring them up here to the moderator, who will ask as many of these questions as she possibly can. We plan for approximately 45 minutes for each of these presentations this evening.
So here we go. I'm going to turn the podium over to Casey Meadows. Thank you. Okay, good evening. Each candidate will have 1 minute for an opening statement and 1 minute for a closing statement. Each candidate has 1 minute to answer the question posed. And also each candidate can take 30 seconds to respond to an answer given by the other candidate. All you need to do is, while the other candidate has said something, you know, sort of raise your hand, let me know that you have something you want to respond to. The timekeepers are right here in the front row. When there is 10 seconds remaining to your one-minute answer, the timekeeper will hold up a yellow card. And then when your time is up, the timekeeper will hold up a red card, and that's your signal to stop talking. So when you see the red card, please wind it up as soon as you can. I don't like to have to interrupt you. So with that, I do have some questions here that people have submitted, but please continue to submit questions for the candidates. A lot of times when they'll say something, it'll spring a question to your mind, and please feel free to write something down. There are going to be folks in the aisles with cards and pencils, so you have, and there's pencils and cards in the back still. You have an opportunity to write something down, pass it forward, and they'll be
the candidates we have for Mendocino County is Mr. Patrick Pekin and Mr. Keith Falder, and we're going to get started with Mr. Pekin. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm an attorney.
Homicide case in Lake County. My office is in Fort Bragg, and I live in the town of Mendocino. My wife and I have a practice together. She's an attorney as well. We met in law school. We went to UC Hastings together. I'm a volunteer firefighter with the Mendocino Volunteer Fire Department, and I have been for 3 years. For 5 years, I coached mock trial with the Fort Bragg mock trial team. Before living in Mendocino County, I lived in the Salinas area, and I practiced criminal law there as well. And that is what is known as a gang intensive area or gang saturated area. I did a lot of gang work and violence work, and I was also appointed to represent prisoners in the Salinas Valley State Prison, which is known as one of the toughest prisons in the state. It's roughly on a par with Pelican Bay. Prior to that, I worked at a law firm known as Gordon & Reese, and that was in San Francisco. Before law school, I lived and worked abroad where I taught English in Turkey and Brazil. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Falder.
Thank you, and good evening, everyone. So I've been an attorney now for 23 years. For 14 of those years, I've been in public service, both with the Public Defender's Office and the Mendocino County District Attorney's Office. I first started in the Fort Bragg and Willits area when I was in the District Attorney's Office, and then I was promoted to the Chief Trial Deputy position. I did the serious and violent felony cases. In the course of my career, I've now done about 42 homicide cases. I was promoted to assistant district attorney, and I was in that position when our elected DA, Norm Vroman, passed, and the Board of Supervisors appointed me the interim district attorney. I have cases that have been published in the California Court of Appeal and the California Supreme Court. For the last 9 years, I've been in private practice doing civil law, family law, juvenile law, but mostly criminal law. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, we'll start with Mr. Falder. Compared to other methods, is this the best way to choose judges?
Well, the only other method would be the governor appointing a judge, and I think that this puts control into the hands of the local voters. I think that this is a good example of it. Both Patrick and I have told you our qualifications, the depth and breadth of our experience, and then you get to choose based on your knowledge of our character, our experience, whether or not we will be the right candidate or the right judge for you. So I think this is the best system.
Thank you. Mr. Pekin?
The appointments process, whether at the federal level or at the state level, is fraught with its own problems. And I'm sure that anyone would agree that at the federal level, certainly with respect to the United States Supreme Court, there is a degree of political maneuvering in any case. At least this way, with the voters, power is dispersed, and power dispersed is probably when it's safest.
Okay, thank you. This time we'll start with you, Mr. Pekin. Do you believe being homeless is a crime?
No.
Okay, Mr. Faulkner?
Falder,
I'm
yes,
so sorry.
It's okay. I can't say it any clearer than that. No, of course, homelessness is not a crime.
Okay. So why is it that we end up with so many homeless people in our jails? Maybe we'll start with you, Mr. Falder.
Well, oftentimes we end up with homeless people in our jails because of other issues that have something to contribute to their homelessness, and that's a mental health issue or a drug addiction issue. And I think that we have many people in this community that have done a lot of hard work to try and bring those kinds of services to people who have mental illnesses and drug addiction issues, but oftentimes people don't get the services they need until their behavior has manifested itself in some sort of criminal behavior. So I think that's the most direct answer, is because that's when their behavior manifests itself in a criminal behavior, unfortunately.
Mr. Pekin?
Well, the question I think was, why are there so many homeless people in the jails? And I think the problem is that once you do become homeless, so many people do have, homeless people have drug and alcohol problems, and they're exposed. They're out of doors and they're visible. People who are intoxicated and visible are easy to arrest, as opposed to people who are behind walls.
Okay, this time we'll start with you, Mr. Pekin. What option other than incarceration is there for the mentally ill when they get themselves into trouble?
I think a lot of the people in this county are working with that right now. Judge Mormon started a mental health court, which is certainly an alternative. Laura's Law discusses outpatient treatment, wraparound services, and there are some of those services available in Mendocino County, although Laura's Law specifically has not been implemented. So Outpatient services are alternative. Things like Manzanita House are alternative. Basically, minding people is what's necessary. It's either minding, in many cases, or in the most extreme cases, lockdown facilities, unfortunately.
Thank you, Mr. Falder.
Well, I think that those are a lot of the points that I would raise as well. What we need to do is make sure that people who have mental health issues get the treatment before they come into the criminal justice system. And we need to be able to allocate those resources at the county level and the city level. But when they do come into the criminal justice system, we do have the mental health court that will address those issues so that we can keep them from coming back into the criminal justice system. And that's an important consideration as well. Once we do have them, if either one of us becomes judge, we need to be able to put our people back into a position where they can be contributing members of society.
Thank you. Mr. Falder, we'll start with you. Have you filed appeals on a ruling? And if so, what was your feeling on the result?
Well, I've had a number of my cases that have been appealed, and they've always been very good for me. I've never had a criminal case reversed on appeal, and I've had cases that have gone to the Court of Appeal and all the way to the California Supreme Court. And I'm very proud of that fact, that the preparation and presentation of those cases that I did, whether I was a prosecutor or a defense attorney, went through the appellate process and were always sustained.
Thank you, Mr. Pekin.
Yes, I filed appeals. Most recently, I filed a writ in a homicide last year in Lake County. It was a close question regarding the merger doctrine in a homicide case, which is probably too much to get into right now. But as I say, it was a close question. It was kind of an academic issue, and I'm not dissatisfied with the result. It was a negative result for me.
Okay, thank you. We'll start with Mr. Pekin. If elected, what steps will you take to join the already established team at the Superior Court?
I suppose go out for lunch. Fortunately, it's a small group. I think that's one of the things that makes Mendocino County so exceptional. There's only 8 judges, and they're all pretty good people. I've met all of them, and I think they do a good job of keeping cordiality in the courts. They treat people with dignity and respect, and you don't always see that in other counties. In other counties, such as Santa Clara, where there's 89 judicial officers, that would be a really good question. It's hard to find your place in this massive machine. But here in Mendocino County, with only 8 judges who are very in tune with the community and who treat people well and have the time to take on cases, to do cases right, I think it would be pretty easy to become part of this family, I suppose, if I'd call it anything.
Thank you, Mr. Falder.
Well, I believe I'm already a part of the team as a part of the legal process here. But the judges that are currently sitting have been friends of mine since 1998, and I've worked with all of them in one capacity or another, whether as a judge or an attorney before they were elevated to the bench. I'm not here to flatter them. They know this already. You should be very proud of the fact that the judges in this county are the best that you could possibly have, and I'd stack them up against any judges in any other county. So I think I'd work very well with them, and in fact, I work with some of the judges already on different issues like the Mendocino County Law Library.
Thank you. We'll start with you, Mr. Falder. What makes you the better qualified to be a judge?
I really believe it comes down to the depth and breadth of life experience and legal experience. I've been in this community since 1998, and I've been serving this community in many different capacities, as a public defender, as a prosecutor, and as a private attorney. I started my practice in Fort Bragg as a prosecutor, and I've been in the justice courts when they were still here. I've really gotten to know every part of this community, from Covelo to Leggett to Westport to Point Arena, and I'm qualified in that I've been a part of all of that process. Also, I've been a prosecutor. I think that's important, that a person sees both sides of a criminal case, but I've also done civil work, and I think that's very important as well.
Thank you. Mr. Pekin, and let me just say to both of you, these mics are very sensitive, so if you stay off them, they're going to pick up your sound better. Mr. Pekin, what makes you the better qualified to be judge?
Once you determine whether or not a person is qualified to be judge, the next and probably more pertinent question is, are they a right fit for the office? And the question you need to really ask is, can they be independent and can they be fair? So the way you determine that is, what is the person's commitment to service in the county? Have they volunteered for the county? And to what extent do they give back to the county? So once you've figured out that a person has done homicides, gone to a great school, and done a lot of work in the law, the real question is, can the person be fair? That's the issue.
Okay. Let's start with you, Mr. Pekin. Do judges have enough sentencing leeway in under state law these days, or are their hands too often tied?
This is a tension in the law that's recurring over the centuries, frankly, and it's a tension between uniformity of sentencing, which is intended to counteract discriminatory sentencing, versus having discretion in sentencing. And the danger with discretion in sentencing, of course, is having discrimination. And so right now, Governor Brown is actually dealing with this issue in a new law. He wants to change some of the determinate sentencing scheme and make sentencing a little bit more discretionary for nonviolent offenders. I think this is going to be a tension in the law for all time. I think uniformity of sentencing is a good idea, but one size fits all doesn't always work. And discretion in sentencing is fine so long as everyone agrees with the result and feels that the ultimate decision is fair. And that's not always going to be the case in every case with every judicial officer. So I don't think there's any harm in trying out something a little bit more discretion than we currently have, because the determinate sentencing scheme has run away with us a little bit. But nothing's going to be perfect.
Thank you. Mr. Folder?
I think I disagree with Mr. Pekin on this one. I think our judges have a great deal of discretion to do the right thing in every case, whether it's a case that, as we've talked about already, is a criminal behavior that's a manifestation of a drug addiction or a mental health issue. Justice, in my opinion, requires equity, and taking in the individual characteristics of a person is the most important thing a judge can do at the time of sentencing in a criminal case. Our judges do that, and they have the discretion to do that, and I think that it's a very important consideration that they have that. We want to make sure that they keep that discretion to be able to do the right thing in every case, so we get justice in every case.
Thank you. We'll start with Mr. Folder. What do you feel would be some of the biggest challenges transitioning from an attorney to a judicial officer?
Well, I've sat as a judge pro tem in the past, so I understand that you represent the community as a whole. You want to make sure that you're not representing this individual or that individual. In fact, just to say it bluntly, whoever you vote for here, you have to understand that we would then never be able to do anything for you again. It would be making sure that everyone who came in through the system got an absolute fair shake. I don't think it's going to be a difficult transition because I've done it before, but I've also shifted roles in representing an individual defendant where you, in many cases, feel like you're stepping into the shoes of that defendant and then representing the people of the state of California as a prosecutor. I don't foresee any difficulty in making that transition to judge, where I take into consideration how my decisions would affect the community as a whole as well.
Thank you. Mr. Pekin?
Well, the big difference is, as an attorney, you're investigating facts, you're researching the law, and you're trying to win. And that's a laudable and honorable goal. That's how the system is set up. I have no qualms with that. As a judge, though, you're listening to the facts, you're researching the law, and you're trying to do what's right. You're not trying to win anything. And that's an equally laudable goal. And strangely enough, it's almost like a return to law school in a way, where you're trying to find the right answer to a thing, not necessarily the answer that's going to win. And I don't think that transition would present any challenge whatsoever.
Okay, thank you. We'll start with you, Mr. Pekin. What is the biggest challenge to being a judge?
Being patient. I think that in the legal practice, particularly the criminal legal field, you have to understand that a lot of people that you're dealing with have lived their entire lives in crisis. From the day they can remember, they're getting expelled or evicted, or dad's getting arrested, or something terrible is happening, and it's one crisis to the next. And so you're dealing with people in their darkest moment, they're frightened and they're scared, and you have to have patience. And that can be hard sometimes, because people from that kind of background can be very difficult to deal with, and they can be frustrating. So that's the biggest challenge. I think it's a challenge that I can meet, because I see people like that on a daily basis as a volunteer firefighter. Just this Sunday, for instance, I rescued two people from the ocean. One was a woman who was sitting on a cliff, and I had to coax her to jump into the water with me to be saved. And I had to have patience because she was frightened and frustrated.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Falder.
Yeah, being patient is certainly important, but so is being prepared and being consistent. I think those are important qualities for a judge. If you've ever been in the courtroom recently as a juror or just an observer, you'll see that the caseloads can be quite large. There's a lot of people that go through the criminal justice system, but also through the juvenile court and the civil courts. So being able to put in the hard work, put in the preparation and the time that it takes to do the right thing on every case, it's not going to be a difficult thing to do, because that's what we do in our criminal or our private practice already, but that is the most important thing, to be thorough, to be prepared, and to be consistent.
Thank you. We'll start with you, Mr. Folder. Are excessive incarceration rates as serious a problem here as it is elsewhere in the country? And if so, what strategies do you favor for reducing those rates?
Well, you know, I have to be honest, I don't know what incarceration rates are in other jurisdictions, but what we need to do in this community is, I believe, what the judges have been doing already, and that's making sure that each case is decided on its merits and each sentence is decided on who the person is that presents to the court. So incarceration rates, well, incarceration is for people that need to be protected, we need to protect ourselves from in the community. And there are all sorts of other alternatives to incarceration. And all of those alternatives will be available to anyone who sits in this position as judge.
Thank you, Mr. Pekin.
What you're talking about is a United States Supreme Court decision called Brown versus Plata. And that's a decision that basically said the California criminal prison system is too full. It's at 200% capacity, and it has to be emptied. Now, the funny thing is that's a very old decision. It originally started out as, no, it was known as Coleman versus Wilson. In other words, it involved Governor Wilson. That's how old this problem is in California. So the incarceration rate and how high it's been has been a long problem, and it came as a result of tough on crime rules. They built a lot of prisons in the 90s, and then they filled them all up because everyone was getting 25 to life sentences. So it's certainly an issue, and right now California is trying to deal with it in a lot of creative ways. These are realignment, Prop 47, and we'll see what the fallout is from these new laws. They are the law, and I will follow them as judge.
Thank you. We'll start with you, Mr. Pekin. What's the salary of a judge, and do you feel that it's the correct amount?
It's $189,000, I believe. I might be missing some change. Do I believe it's the correct amount? I couldn't say.
Mr. Falder?
Well, I think we have a few judges that might be able to answer that question better, but that's my understanding as well.
Okay. Let's talk about the new planned new courthouse. We'll start with Mr. Falder. Do you support the state's plan for the new courthouse on Perkins Street here in Ukiah? And what should we do with the old courthouse?
Well, we need a new courthouse, and whether it's a brand new courthouse or not, I think it's inevitable that it's coming. We've already got it planned. But the old courthouse isn't a good courthouse. It's dangerous for staff, it's dangerous for inmates, it's dangerous for the public in a lot of ways. It's kind of a real black mark, I think, on this community, in fact, that juveniles have to be taken from juvenile hall and brought in through the public streets, the main street of Ukiah, and brought into the courthouse. But security is a big issue, and it needs to be addressed with a new building. So I think that we need a new courthouse. Whether we need a $98 million courthouse, I don't know. What we do with the old courthouse, I'd love to see it turned into a museum, but it looks to me like the way it's going is that it's going to be county building, and county offices for a while at least.
Thank you, Mr. Pekin.
To my understanding, the old courthouse has been renovated about three times. The jail used to be on top, the front was torn off and replaced with something else, and currently, according to the Judicial Council, it's a level 5 on the seismic scale. It means it could not get any worse. I don't know, because I'm not an engineer, what it would cost or how long it would take to retrofit something like that. What I do know is they tried to do something like that down where I used to practice in Salinas. It took 7 years, during which time felony trials, the DA's office, and the public defender's office were all in mobiles, as if Hurricane Katrina had just hit, all around the courthouse, and asbestos was found, and there were cost overruns and time overruns. I guess the bottom line is that the new courthouse will be owned by the state of California, and it's their decision. And the old courthouse is 80% owned by the state of California, and it's still their decision. And the decision's been made, and it's going through.
Thank you. We'll start with you, Mr. Pekin. What court department would you prefer to be in?
Criminal. Felony.
Why?
I like criminal law. It's interesting. You get to deal with people quickly on a fast-moving basis on a lot of different cases that move through and have different fact patterns. Criminal law is an interesting area of the law because it's quicker. And you get to have interesting stories from it.
Okay. Mr. Falder.
Well, there's a saying that in the criminal law, it's the worst people on their best behavior, and the civil law, the best people on their worst behavior. But I became a lawyer because I like the challenge of the law, and it won't be my decision where I would serve as a judge. And I've had the experience in civil and juvenile and family law, although that admittedly is my weakest area. But there is no place in this county that I wouldn't be honored to serve as judge.
Okay, thank you. We'll start this time with Mr. Falder. What experience do you have with civil as opposed to criminal law, and try to be specific?
Well, I've prosecuted or defended, asset forfeiture is a part of civil law. And so I've done a lot of the asset forfeiture cases where property is taken from people in the community, and I've worked to get that property back for those people. But I've also defended people and prosecuted civil cases. Particularly, there was a case on the coast where a school principal was wrongfully terminated. At least that was our position that he was. And so we took that case to a jury trial and got a verdict on that case. So I have had civil jury trial experience, but a lot of civil cases that I've done have settled short of a jury trial.
Thank you, Mr. Pekin.
Well, during law school and after law school, I worked for the law firm of Gordon and Reese, and they did a lot of construction litigation, insurance defense litigation, basic high-end civil corporate stuff. I wasn't necessarily a good fit, but it was very interesting. And for about a year, I did family law, I've done a family law trial, and I've also handled some anti-SLAPP litigation, which involves strategic lawsuits against public participation. It's an area of civil law dealing with the First Amendment.
Thank you. We'll start this time with Mr. Pekin. Have you ever been disciplined by the state bar? If so, please explain.
No.
Okay. Mr. Falder?
In 2007, I was admonished by the state bar because when I worked for the district attorney's office, I had appeared on a case, and after I left the district attorney's office, I made one appearance on that same case as a defense attorney, not knowing that I had made that appearance as a prosecutor. And so I had that admonition.
Thank you. We'll start this time with Mr. Falder. What do you think about the idea of night court?
Well, it would be a good idea if we had that kind of volume, but I don't think we have that kind of volume. But I think it's really important that people have access to the court. So if there are people that need to be able to access the court because they work Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, that would be a good idea. Quite frankly, though, I haven't heard that that's been something that's been needed in this community.
Mr. Peek?
It was a series I was very, I found very enjoyable when I was younger. I think it would be fine. I believe in access to justice. One of the things that I worked very hard on was preserving the Coast Court in 10 Mile. I believe in teen court. For 5 years, I coached mock trial where we taught kids how the justice system worked. So bringing justice closer to the people where it's more convenient for the people to have access to justice is a big motivator for me. I think that's a good thing.
Okay.
There's no harm in trying it.
Thank you. Mr. Pekin, we'll start with you. What, if anything, would you change about the legal system in Mendocino County?
I'd be curious about having more conferences in chambers with judges, DAs, and defense attorneys. That's something that I've seen in most other counties, Santa Cruz, Monterey County, Santa Clara County, when there are negotiations. It forces all the attorneys and the judge to get together and discuss a case for a little while before the case goes on to trial. I like the way things work here, and I'm not in any way criticizing them. I'm just suggesting that maybe we could try something else. But I'm sure there's good reasons for the way we do things here anyway.
Thank you, Mr. Falder.
Without a doubt, I'd like to see the way we handle juvenile cases differently. in bringing juveniles from juvenile hall and bringing them through the main street. I know I commented on this already, but it's a big deal. Juvenile cases are supposed to be confidential. We're not supposed to know the names of the juveniles or the juvenile proceedings. And when they're brought in handcuffs and shackles and orange jumpsuits down the main street of Ukiah, I think that's wrong, and I'd like to see that change.
Okay. We'll start this time with you, Mr. Folder. What can you tell us about how you approach cases in which it is clear that mental health issues of the defendants are involved, and what could be changed?
Well, we have, first of all, we've got some really good resources with veterans. If it's a veteran that's presenting with a mental health issue, we have statutes that help get them the services, and the federal government has been pretty good about providing access to those services for those defendants that have military history. As far as other people in the community, we have, oftentimes we'll have to get psychological evaluations to determine the cause and scope of that mental illness and whether or not it's a dual diagnosis. Oftentimes we find that people who present with a mental health issue, that it's directly related to a drug addiction issue as well. And so we need to have both of those addressed. We have the alcohol and other drugs program in this community, so people can be referred to those mental health experts and those drug addiction experts to determine the level and scope of the addiction or the mental health issue so that the court can then address that.
Thank you. Mr. Pekin.
I mean, I suppose a big difference when you have a patient who has mental health issues is, are they a patient who already has mental health care, or are they a person without any kind of care or any kind of money? If they have no money, you have to work your way through the system and see which sorts of resources are available. There are some resources available, but it can be complicated and confusing for a person. So the one thing that I would change about it is to streamline the level of services that could be available for people without funds, and that's whether they are in the criminal justice system or are not.
Thank you. We'll start with Mr. Pekin. Do you feel that the judiciary, as far as gender and race, should be more reflective of the population in general, and how would you go about trying to make that change in our county?
You know, the role of a judicial officer is to decide the facts, apply the law, and ensure a fair process. The role, I think diversity is great. I welcome diversity on the bench and in the bar and in this county. But I, as a judicial officer, would only be able to address discrimination as it comes from the government or an employer or a company. And that's how these questions come to a judicial officer. It is not up to a judicial officer to do outreach programs and generate diversity. That's just not a judicial officer's purpose. That goes beyond the role of the job.
Well, I think the question was more, do you think that we should have more women and culturally diverse judges?
I like what Justice Ginsburg said on the subject. She was asked, when will there be enough women on the Supreme Court? And she said, 9. And you know, when they asked her, well, that seems like a whole lot. And she said, well, I mean, for a couple centuries, there was only men and nobody seemed to have a problem with it. So I suppose it would be fine if we reached a stage where there were only women and no one thought it was odd. So yes.
Thank you. Mr. Folder?
Well, the answer is, of course, we want to see more diversity in this community at every level, including the judiciary. And that's where the Mendocino Women's Political Coalition is such an important part. They encourage political candidates, including those running for judge, who are female, who are women, who have the kind of training and experience that make them good public servants. Now, we wanted to make sure that it happens at the attorney level, and I think that that's where we need to encourage women and minorities to stay in this community. And we've encouraged a young man in our community, a guy named Sergio Fuentes, to be a part of our a law firm, to be a part of this community, so he can help represent people in this community of color. But we also need to make sure that when people come into our community, and I've said this a number of times about our county being penny wise and dollar foolish, some of the best lawyers that have come through here, and law enforcement officers as well, who are female or were of color, left because we couldn't afford to keep them here.
Okay, thank you. We'll start with Mr. Folder. Let's talk about endorsements. Who are some of the endorsements that you're most proud of, and why?
Well, I have a wide range of endorsements, but Sheriff Tom Allman has endorsed me. District Attorney Dave Eister has endorsed me, Ukiah Police Chief Chris Dewey has endorsed me, and Willits Police Chief Jerry Gonzalez has endorsed me. But I'm really also proud of the endorsements of the Ukiah Police Officers Association and the Willits Police Officers Association and the Deputy Sheriff's Association. And remember, I've been in private practice doing mostly criminal defense for the last 9 years, and these are the people that have seen me in court since 1998, practicing and both as a prosecutor and as a defense attorney, and that the fact that they endorse me and that they know that I will be fair and impartial and give everyone a fair shake is a real proud thing for me.
Thank you, Mr. Pekin.
I'm proud of every single one of my endorsers, but a few that I should point out are I'm endorsed by three retired Mendocino County Superior Court judges. I'm endorsed by more than half the fire chiefs in this county because I am a volunteer firefighter. I'm endorsed by the mayors of Willits, Ukiah, and Fort Bragg. I'm endorsed by a host of retired supervisors, a sitting supervisor, and a variety of other doctors, lawyers, and community leaders throughout this county. I have a broad spectrum of support. I think about 400 endorsers, and I'm proud of every single one of them. And I think their endorsements speak to my ability to be fair and independent.
Thank you. This will be our last question, and we'll start with you, Mr. Pekin. What would you like your judicial legacy to be?
Boy. My hair didn't get any more gray. I suppose that I kept Mendocino County in the way it is. This is an exceptionally unique county, and that's really worth pointing out. And I keep repeating it, and I have been repeating it throughout the course of this campaign. People keep asking me, what would you change when you get on the bench? How would you be different when you get on the bench? And I've practiced through a lot of counties throughout the state, Monterey, Santa Clara, and in all of these places, judges lack patience. Just people just don't get treated as well. It's not necessarily because the judges there are bad judges or they're cruel. It's just they don't have the time to devote to the cases that's needed. And so if I was to leave any legacy at all, whatsoever, it would be that things in Mendocino County stayed as they are. I think it's worth preserving.
Thank you. Mr. Folder?
I think the highest level of public service for a lawyer is to be a judge. And so I would like my legacy to be that of public service, that I worked hard, I worked intelligently, I worked thoroughly, and I was fair and honest and treated everyone with the respect and dignity that you would expect of a Superior Court judge.
Thank you. Okay, gentlemen, we're going to give you each 1 minute to wrap up, add anything that you feel you need to add. And we're going to start with Mr. Folder, since we started with Mr. Pekin in the first round.
Well, I want to thank you for being here and thank my wife for all of her support. You don't do this alone, there's no doubt about it, and everyone else who has supported me through this process. I've worked hard for this community. I would be honored to be your Superior Court judge. I'll continue to work hard. I've been a part of this community for a long time. Both as an attorney, but as also a member of the community. I've been on the Board of Trustees for Project Sanctuary, which is a great organization, and I would encourage everyone to help support that organization. I've been the president of the Mendocino County Law Library for the last 10 years. I've been an instructor in criminal justice up at Mendocino College. All of that is something I'm very proud of, and I would be very proud to serve as your Superior Court judge as well.
Thank you. Mr. Pekin.
I went to one of the best law schools in the state. I practiced in a high-crime, gang-saturated area, East Salinas. I was appointed to in-prison cases at one of the toughest prisons in the state. There is no tougher arena to practice law. I moved here, I started a law office, and from the day I arrived, I've been devoted to service to Mendocino County. That's 5 years at mock trial, 15 hours a week, teaching kids how justice works. That's why I'm endorsed by Carolyn Brown, the county mock trial coordinator. And for 3 years, I've been a volunteer firefighter. I've been devoted to service to the people of this county, and I've handled auto accidents, DUIs, people who've been intoxicated, domestic violence incidents, ocean rescue, cliff rescue. I've answered the call to service, and I'm prepared to do it again here as a judicial officer. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you both very much for being here tonight.